The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this afternoon. They've changed the clock on us, so it's getting dark outside. I see through the windows. But there is light. The light is that tomorrow is Election Day, and it's almost over, this part. All but the shouting, as we say. And we're dying to hear what you think at 410-319-8888 about this election. We're going to talk about a number of things this hour. My friend and often co-host, part of Center for Emerging Media, haven't seen her in a while, but she's back, is Leah Gilmore.
Hey there, Mark.
Who helped us cover the Democratic National Convention.
Yes, yes, I did.
She's program director for the Maryland Black Family Alliance and a board member of the Maryland ACLU, among at least another five dozen boards I have to think about that she's on.
It's a miracle.
And she is one of the America and the world's greatest gospel and blues singers. And we'll do that another day, though.
Well, thank you, Mark, my new publicist. Thank you very much.
Anytime. Kevin Dayhoff, who can't sing a lick, is with us as well.
Yes. She's a lot more attractive than you.
I wasn't going to say that, Kevin, but now that you mention it.
Oh, Kevin.
Kevin Dayhoff is a former mayor of Westminster, Maryland. And
KevinDayhoff.net.
.net is to go read his blogs. He has been an activist in the Republican Party for many years. And when he was mayor, he was the Republican mayor of Westminster. And Leah Gilmore is not a Republican.
Not very much, not. But I am a fan of Westminster. I'm at McDaniel College every summer.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Common Ground.
Common Ground, that's right.
Great program.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, great program.
410-319-8888. So let's talk about what you all think about this election and who you're voting for tomorrow. Tell us why you're voting, your thoughts about the other big ballot measures taking place in the state of Maryland, which, of course, slots is one, and early voting is the other of the two big statewide ballots. We have two races that are competitive, one very competitive, on the first district between Andy Harris and Frank Cradiville. Andy Harris, a Republican state senator, a very conservative Republican state senator, and Frank Cradiville, state's attorney in Queen Anne, not Queen Anne's, yes, county.
Yeah, Queen
it's
Anne's,
Queen Anne's, Queen Anne's
County.
Right.
Who is a McDaniel College graduate.
Yes, he is. I know that, right.
Stay focused here. who made this race very competitive and actually is neck and neck now with Andy Harris.
Yes.
And, of course, the 6th District is also semi-competitive. I think 4 or 5 points right now are between Jennifer Daugherty and Roscoe Bartlett, the sitting Republican congressman.
We did a program on the 1st back in January,
yes.
You and I did. Yeah. Who would have thought that it would have tightened up this
and
much?
And it is.
It's exceptionally tight.
Yeah.
So, I think
for the first time a Democrat is actually viable.
So we have
for quite
a,
some time.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, for quite some time.
So that's an amazing race. And we talked to Frank Radival this week, and I drove down Andy Harris's street the other day just to see if it was true, and it's true that almost the majority of the signs in Andy Harris's street are Cradiville signs. I don't know what that says. That's really an interesting little sidebar I thought I'd throw out there. They said, this is blocked. They can drive down, so I did.
But you did a good program on the...
It was a good one.
It was a very good program.
So, and the toss-up states now are really tossing up, and Florida is now, looks like maybe just a couple of points up for Obama, not 50%, 48.6. Toss-up for McCain, about a point ahead in North Carolina at the moment. Missouri, toss-up, McCain says, is ahead by half a point by a conglomeration of these polls. Indiana, McCain up by maybe a point or a point. Only a point in Indiana. Georgia, up by 4 points. Montana, up by 3 points. Virginia... Obama has almost 50% of the vote there in Virginia and up. And Ohio, the same thing. Colorado, the same thing. Nevada, the same thing. Pennsylvania, almost 52% of the vote. New Mexico, over 50% of the vote for Obama. So it's...
Well, did you mention it? You just mentioned Ohio?
Yep.
Okay.
And the Dakota.
So
Dakota.
Let's talk about what this phenomenon
is. But
happened.
I was kind of impressed with... is Virginia 50-50 at this point in time?
Virginia is it's actually closer to 50% for Obama and 46% or so for
and Pennsylvania.
And CNN, I saw the poll. He was at 50 for Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I saw it. So, you know, but all the polls are within 1% and 2% of each other, you know.
Right.
But there's this general trend that we haven't really seen before in some of these states where a Democrat is actually viable in Missouri. And what is shocking to me, Arizona, you know, Senator McCain's own state.
It's being called a toss-up now.
Well, how about Indiana?
Oh, it's unheard of.
Or didn't we just talked earlier in the green room about Arizona.
Let's talk for a minute about what we think is going on here. And I'm really curious to see what all of you out there listening between Northern Virginia and Bowie and Washington and Baltimore and Bel Air, who are listening to this program right now at 410-319-8888, what you think. Why do you think this is happening? What do you think the phenomenon here is in America? People talk about the Bradley effect, the white people are going to go in and then not poll for a black man. Many people now, though, are talking about the opposite taking place.
That's right.
The anti-Bradley effect. Mm-hmm. But there's something going on in America that where maybe it's the economy, maybe it's more the economy. What do you all think is happening that would make these staunchly Republican parts of our world become Democratic, Leah?
I just think there is so much frustration out there. And we experienced 8 years of difficulty and, you know, the resulting financial crisis. There's just this groundswell. We keep hearing change, change, change. And we hear it so much that it almost becomes, you know, muted. But the reality is that people really do want change. I also think that this is unprecedented. We constantly hear the media drum the Bradley effect in our ear, the Bradley effect. But, you know, to me, the Bradley effect should have already happened. You know, we've got Senator Obama here at this place, this unprecedented place. This is such an election that has not followed really the traditional way of elections, that using the traditional ways of, you know, analysis is just not applicable. I'm so excited. I can't stand it. I can't tell you. And I just think, and Kevin and I were talking in the green room, just reasonable people on both sides should be excited about what's happening in our country. When I look at the lines, it's like when a developing country first gets democracy. That's what these lines look like in the pre-voting. You see people wrapped around, old people taking chairs and sitting down and say, I'm not leaving till I vote. This is unprecedented in my lifetime.
And apparently it's going to surpass, what was it, the 1992 election as far as voter turnout. And then for whatever reason, and I just didn't have an extra moment to do some research, apparently the 1908 election, folks really turned out. But for the listeners who are not familiar with the Bradley effect, that was when African-American Tom Bradley was on course to win a victory as governor of California in 1982. And the exit poll showed that he was going to be the winner. And as a matter of fact, he lost that election. Now, on the other hand, there is some discussion about whether or not there is a Republican spiral of silence,
right,
and whether or not the polls are going to be accurate. Of course, the polls were not accurate in 2000 and 2004. But I share your excitement. It's an extraordinarily exciting time to be a political scientist, to be a historian, to be a presidential scholar. It's an exciting race. It's an unprecedented race, and it's great for the country that everyone is interested.
But I think, Leah, what you were referring to, not to put words in your mouth, so you do it yourself. But
I will definitely do it myself.
Yes,
thank you.
You.
But you can help me right now.
Okay.
Come on.
There's a palpable sense in certain communities among certain people in America, and I don't just mean black folks, I'm talking about in different parts of America, of an excitement about this election. They're pushing. I mean, the idea that Obama might win has got a huge piece of this nation just very nervous, on edge. I mean, I've never felt it out here like this before.
Right.
Everybody's holding their breath.
Yeah, everyone's holding their breath.
For 36 hours,
yes.
We're going to hold our breath. But it's interesting when you look at so many, the media has been, it's been a constant drumbeat recently that Obama's going to win, Obama's going to win. I wonder if that's going to suppress some of the Obama vote, or I wonder if it's going to deter some of the McCain vote from coming out.
You know, and I think we don't know. To be very honest, I think we don't know. But I think that even the Obama campaign has been very reticent lately to declare this a victory. They're saying we need every single person to come out.
In spite of the media.
In spite of the media.
Interpreting everything that the man says as being overconfident or measuring for the draperies. And
it's very frustrating, actually.
But another thing, Sugar Shoot, it was a number of elections a number of years ago in which all of the polls, I think it was in Ohio, and the polls said one thing, and the results were profoundly different. And they asked some knowledgeable person in Ohio at the time what happened, and he said more people came out to vote than we ever anticipated. So that's going to be another interesting aspect of this. When the polls look at a likely voter, what qualifies a person as a likely voter, and how is this overwhelming outpouring of voters going to affect the final results? And well, it's just fascinating. It's great to be
in this. It's absolutely fascinating. I am loving it too. And this, as you said, this 36 hours is absolutely killing me. But I think that I'm not the only one out there. But there, let's talk about the media for a second, the interpretations of what both candidates are saying. And it's quite frustrating when you hear Obama constantly tell the electorate, go vote. This is not sewed up. We don't have this. But if he says, you know, we are ahead, then all of a sudden he's measuring for the draperies, he's confident. There's really been a very interesting effect with the media, just watching how the media has gone through this campaign, even with Palin, mm-hmm. who I'm not a fan of, but, you know, spending, you know, days and days on her $150,000, on the Republican National Committee's $150,000 purchase of her clothing was a bit of a, you know,
that
a
she's going to give away to charity. We've got two ground wars. We've got economic chaos.
We have a crisis
in health care.
That's right.
And folks are wondering whether or not she's wearing Jimmy Choo shoes.
One of the things I think we'll look at after the election, if Obama should win, is Obama and a Democratic Congress, which Goss could be in the offing.
Right.
And that people think that if Obama wins, it'll be a cakewalk for Democrats, because there'll be Democrats all over the place in the Senate and the House. But I think the exact opposite.
I think it's the opposite.
Exactly.
The Democrats are a raucous group that go across
a lot of political spectrums.
We are absolutely not a monolithic group. And the Democrats who are winning are not these vastly far-left Democrats. They are quite centrist Democrats who are winning in these southern states with conservative social values.
Well, when you look at a lot of the close contests, when you look at, one of the questions, of course, is whether or not the Senate is going to be filibuster-proof. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the Democratic seats that are getting picked up in the House and the Senate, they're picking off the moderate Republicans is what they're doing.
Yeah.
And you're going to see Cradiville. Cradiville is not a liberal. Cradiville is an extraordinarily conservative Democrat. And what Congress is going to see is an awful lot of conservative Democrats that are really not going to quite have the stomach for a Nancy Pelosi or a Harry Reid. So
but I think it's good.
Really
I think it's good because even though there are these conservative Democrats, they still share some of the social values that the Democratic Party has. And I think there is never going to be in this country, if we have a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress, there is never going to be just non-dissension. I mean, that's the wonderful thing about checks and balances.
I mean, there will be dissension. Yeah. I think what a Democratic majority means is that there will be a different federal court system. It'll mean that
which I pray happens.
Which is that's one of the big differences that'll take place, where there won't be a lot of dissension. But let's see what listeners think. I mean, what do you all think out there? 410-319-8888. What this election means to you, why you're voting, sense maybe what your relatives and friends are telling you from across the country. They have relatives in North Carolina, may have relatives in Indiana, may have relatives across from anywhere. What is going on in your old home states, your family states, where people may be doing early voting? 410-319-8888. And it's interesting that in Fox, on the Fox Forum, Jonathan Morris is saying that he thinks elections can be a lot tighter than people realize. There's going to be a Tuesday night surprise, and McCain is going to pull it out. And the pollsters are going to be wrong about this, and then a lot of people are just not telling the truth about who they're going to vote for.
Of course he's going to say that.
Well, but when you look at this, when you look at the number of toss-up states, I mean, I think we're going to see some early indications. It could very well be an early evening. I mean, you look at Florida. What are the Florida results going to say? What are the North Carolina results? If McCain loses Florida, McCain loses North Carolina, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Indiana.
There's no recovery from
There's no recovery. The math just simply does not work.
And that's what Obama has on his side right now. I really don't think this is a given. It is not a given. But if we just look purely mathematically right now at this moment, taking out the undecided, you know, he's over 300 electoral votes in many of the calculations.
Let's hear what some of our listeners have to say about this. We talk with Leah Gilmore and Kevin Dayhoff about the upcoming election. Tomorrow is Election Day, folks. If I said it once, I'll say it a dozen times. I'll say it all the time. Vote. This is a time to vote. I heard a very lovely poem the other day by a woman from the Dominican Republic who was on the radio talking about she's voting for all those who died so she could vote in the Dominican Republic, who died for a vote and were not allowed to vote, and all those who fought in the South to end segregation so everyone can vote. This is a time to vote. You have to go out and pull a lever. I don't care whose lever you pull. You've got to pull a lever. 410-319-8888. Leslie in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark.
Hi, Leslie.
And his guest.
Hi, good evening, Leslie.
Hi, nice to hear you.
I mean, this is the most auspicious time, to say the least. I never thought that, you know, I would be, would ever see a time when a brother was ever in the front of anything.
I feel you.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful thing. And, you know, I'm a vote for the brother primarily because he's a brother. But the point I like to make is, you know, I think that we need to remember that Barack Obama was selected for this position.
Was what?
He was selected to run for president.
Right.
And I think that the Democrats should be seriously commended for their strategy in this, because they knew that something like this would bring out the vote to such a level that, just like the man said almost a year and a half ago, that it's a Democrat election to give away. You know, and I think that since, as usual, how they think that black people are automatically belong to the Democratic Party, and we see the response that, you know, African-Americans, everybody, you know, this boy's going to ace it just because, primarily because he got the support of the black people. And I think that, you know, it behooves us, our leaders, our black media, our black educators, the pastors, and everybody to keep it in the front when it comes time for this man to start demonstrating that he is truly about change. And I think that he needs to be made aware that, man, look, you see what happened when we come together, and I'm talking about as black people. See, I think that as a result of this, I think that the Republican Party is going to start paying more attention to the black vote, because they know what happened. They probably kicking
themselves
up the butt that they didn't think of this first.
Well, let me jump in on it, because we have callers calling in from Severn, Maryland, Edgewood, Virginia, all over the place. I want to get them in on the air here. I'd also like to add to you, you only want to say something very quickly about this. The New York Times poll, though, that came out, what somebody wrote about was that Obama is drawing right now 44% of the white vote in America. Higher than Bill Clinton.
That's right.
44%.
Crucial point. Obama would not be in the place he is now with only the black vote. As an African American, I am beyond proud. As the daughter of a sharecropper who would have never believed this has happened, I'm beyond proud. Who couldn't vote. That's right. And I'm only 43 years old, so put that in perspective. I told that one. But this is such... It is such a movement of Americans. Mm-hmm. It is a movement of all Americans who truly believe that this man is going to bring change. And let's put it in perspective, because when we first started, Hillary Clinton had the majority of African-American support. And that support had shifted to Obama just because of the way things, you know, went throughout the campaign.
Starting in Iowa.
That's right, starting in Iowa. Which African-Americans finally said, oh, my God, he's real. It could really happen after the Iowa win.
Now, Kevin, before we let you jump back in here, let me go back to the phones, because Mary Washington on the phone and Joseph, Jahan, Lee, and Janelle, all who are calling in from across the state. Hold on, I'm going to come to your calls. Also going to have a slight debate in the air in a few minutes between Ken Anderson and Hans von Spakovsky about a voter fraud in America. That's part of this what's going on tomorrow, but the contentions around that. But Mary Washington is working for Obama in Virginia. She's calling in with a report of what her sense of what's going on. Mary, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Mary.
Hello, everybody. Hi,
hey,
hi, Mary.
Great
how are
to
you?
Hear you, Mary.
So where are you?
I am in Richmond, Virginia. I'm in the northern part of Richmond, Virginia. And for Baltimoreans, we've been covering areas that look like, if you're in the northeast part of Baltimore, you know, anywhere from North Avenue all the way up to Homeland. Those are all the different neighborhoods that we're covering, and we're seeing Obama signs, and it's really exciting out here.
Well, we just finished talking a minute ago about Mary Washington, about race and this vote. And you're in a... Well, a lot of people think Maryland's also a southern state, and growing up here, I think it is too. But
oh, it is.
But Virginia's a serious southern state. So, talk a bit about the your reception and the reception that you and other Obama volunteers are getting in the majority white sections of Richmond when you go to canvas and talk to people.
Well, I get what I wanted to say was it's exciting about the multiracial and the multiethnic and class crossing that's happening within the electorate. But if you're anyone that has volunteered anywhere throughout the country at an Obama for Change office knows that it's also the people who are volunteering and working and encouraging and pushing those people to get out to vote. It's getting dark now, and we have no intention of stopping until we've hung every door knocker that we've been assigned. And what's also really exciting is that these staging areas aren't big fancy hotels or anything. They're in people's homes, people's garages. And it's exciting to be a part of a real grassroots campaign. So to answer your question, we're seeing support across race, across class. You know, people are tired of the election here. Virginians have gotten a lot of attention. Mailanders don't know what that's like, but they've gotten a lot of attention.
Oh, yeah.
Any that's questions for Mary while she's on the phone here with us before we bring in some other guests?
Mary, this is Lee. I'd just like to thank you for everything you've done.
Oh, yeah, we have to. We're all doing our part.
And I think, Mary, we're both just so tired of the divisiveness. And, you know, have you seen any of that while you're in Virginia at all?
Oh, I guess I don't see it. Again, Southerners are polite, but it's not even the case that I think that there are white voters that are just not saying. I mean, people are saying who they support. And I talked to a woman last night. We were phone banking, and this woman said that she was going to push the button for every Democrat she could possibly get her hands on, because not only are we campaigning for Senator Obama, we're also looking to make a sweep in the Senate and pushing some congressional races here in Virginia that, you know, haven't seen a Republican since Reconstruction. So we're looking to have a real sea change down here.
Well, Mary, we're also looking forward to having you on this air when you come back to hear more about your story. We'll probably call out to you tomorrow on Election Day.
Okay. Hey, everybody, don't forget to vote tomorrow. Bring a friend and help out with the polls.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks.
One of the things that is interesting when I talked about and I hate to have racial splits all the time in this vote, but it is part of this race.
Of course it is.
And, you know, when Ronald Reagan ran in 84, the white vote was 86% of the vote. In 2004, it was like 77% of the vote. And this year, and I'm blocking on this, but I think it's like 73%, 72% of the vote is white in America. So that, I mean, the dynamics, demographics are shifting and changing.
Demographics are shifting.
And so when you're talking about a shift of 44% of white Americans, Americans of European descent, mm-hmm. voting for an African-American candidate, that's a huge shift in the consciousness of this country that probably couldn't have happened in 84. Might not have been able to happen in 2004. Might not have been able to happen unless there was this particular candidate running. I mean, it's a very interesting kind of. I mean, this is to me is going to be very fascinating to see on Wednesday how America voted and where they voted right. and what those votes were, what it says about the structure of who we've become as a people.
Well, I still want to get back to the issues a little bit though. I think one of the reasons why it is that Obama has crossed so many different demographic lines and ideological lines is because of his message, and that he has really transcended much of the tired old racial politics of the past, which I think has caused the Reverend Jesse Jackson a little bit of angst.
You think?
just a little bit. But if 60% of any particular election is personality, and 20% is foreign policy and 20% is our domestic issues, I really think that this election has really skewed, just to a certain extent, some of those classic structural analysis, in that the economy is such a strong part of it, and that Obama was very smart to come out and talk about the economy very at the
and he's consistently.
He's talked about it consistently. It's been a very disciplined campaign. Mm-hmm. It's been a very steady campaign. It's been an extraordinarily well thought campaign. Mm-hmm. If you will recall, remember when he was in the red states, and folks say, "Well, why in the world are you there? Why is he there?"
Right.
And now we're knowing why it is that he's there.
I think their strategy is another unprecedented strategy. I've never seen a campaign run this well. And I think we've both probably seen a lot of campaigns. And even when people were yelling and hollering for Obama, the Democrats were saying, why don't you attack back? Come back. You know, yell back. Say, no, I'm not a socialist. No, I'm not a terrorist lover. His strategy, their strategy, was to stay cool. And we now see the benefits of that now.
Let me open the phone to you again. We just heard from you again. Kevin Dayhoff is with us. Your thoughts at 410-319-8888 before we talk to Ken Anderson and Hans von Spakovsky about voter fraud in this election. Is it real or not real? And let's hear from, oh, I was going to go to, okay, I can't go, she's gone. So let's go to Jahan. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys?
Hi, Jahan.
Hi.
So what I've kind of seen, I'm in downtown Baltimore, work and live here, and with the limited number of Republicans, it seems from the people that I've been talking to and friends and family out of state, is that the election is kind of the opposite of where we were 4 and 8 years ago, where a lot of Democrats were feeling, you know, it's not that I necessarily believe what the candidate is saying, it's that I don't like what the Republican candidate is saying. And I feel like it's the opposite this year, where a lot of the Republicans, diehard Republicans who've always been Republican in the past are now starting to feel that kind of same itch, where they don't really like...
Did we just lose you, Jahan?
Yeah, it seems like there's some music playing over you.
I can hear some music, too. I guess I hope that... See if we can push a button in there and get rid of the music. This happens.
There we go.
Go ahead.
So a lot of the Republicans are feeling like, you know, it's not necessarily that I like what McCain's saying, but I dislike Obama, so I'm going to vote against Obama as opposed to for McCain.
And tell me what you dislike about Obama.
Oh, it's not that I do. That's what the Republicans that I've been talking to.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you, Don. My fault. Maybe it was the music that got in my way. That's interesting. So, I think that there is that. I mean, I've heard a lot of stories about the kind of dislike of Obama. And I think that part of it, and I hate to be bringing this up, but I think a lot of it, it's ideological. People, conservative, don't want a liberal or moderate liberal person becoming president of the United States of America.
Right.
That's A. And B, there's also race.
And that plays, I think, a lot more of an issue in it than a lot of people want to admit.
And if you'll recall, the last time I was on the air...
Jahan, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you. There was some good insights. The last time I was on the air, I took a little bit of flack because I would like to believe that we've come a little bit farther along in a nation, to look beyond the color of Obama's skin and look at the issues. And when you look at the issues, I've talked with a lot of Republicans who find Senator Obama to be a perfectly likable person, but his positions on foreign policy, his positions on national security, his economic policies are extraordinarily troubling to many folks. And I think for as many folks who are looking forward to spreading the wealth and getting something for nothing, there are a number of other folks who are looking at... There are a number of other folks who are looking at, it should be Lou Reed.
Got a soundtrack.
We have to take a short break. We'll be right back with our guests. And I think by then we'll be also joined by Ken Anderson and Hans von Spakovsky, and our two guests in studio, and all of you, Abu and Robert and Joseph, hold on. We're going to come to your calls as well. We'll be right back. Rosa Parks, called the mother of the civil rights movement, was an ordinary person whose extraordinary courage in challenging segregation stimulated 5 decades of effort aimed at reaching the goal of equal protection for all. Many Marylanders also challenged the system of segregation. Starting today and leading up to the anniversary of Rosa Parks' decision to sit down to take a stand on December 1st, each week we will profile a Marylander who, like Rosa Parks, was an ordinary citizen who courageously committed themselves to the cause.
What we need for the new generation is the consummate expression of the virtues and aspirations we have in common with all Americans. Our supposed differences have been exploited for far too long. All of God's children have wings.
Those are the words of Carl Murphy, the so-called tireless agitator, who was the editor and publisher of the Afro-American newspaper for 45 years, from 1922 to 1967. His father was the founder of the paper. His grandson, Ben Phillips, who works at the paper today, remembers his grandfather as a larger-than-life figure.
Grandfather always seemed like he was 7 feet tall. Of course, he was barely, I think, 5'3 or 5'4. My early remembrances of him is that you always had to say grandfather. You didn't say papa. You said grandfather. While you might have seen as a young person seemed unapproachable, he was actually very open.
As editor and publisher of the Afro-American, Carl Murphy was in a unique position to help shape and lead the early civil rights movement. His writings for the Afro's opinion pages were designed to encourage the foot soldiers in the fight for equal rights and to challenge the political establishment to change the status quo. His grandson, Ben Phillips, remembers.
As a publisher and editor, you did not see him out on the forefront making the speeches. His whole role was to make sure that the message got out, that you had a full open airing of the message. He would put that stark story out there.
Among the stark stories that Carl Murphy put out there were issues of integration among police officers, firemen, and teachers. He attacked examples of disparity between Maryland's black colleges and Maryland's white colleges. In 1935, Carl Murphy became the legal defense chairman of the NAACP to fight laws that upheld political and racial discrimination. In a 1952 editorial, he wrote,
"The oftener our legislatures pass this type of legislation, and the oftener it is upheld by the Supreme Court, the sooner will come the day when Americans are no longer free citizens in a free society. We will become a nation of robots, forced to conform to a pattern designed by and only for the benefits of the favored group in power. Then, liberty, as we once knew it, will be but a memory."
One of Carl Murphy's biggest contributions to the civil rights movement was his role in helping integrate the University of Maryland Law School in 1936 with a strategy that would later be used to integrate schools all over Jim Crow South. Thurgood Marshall, who worked with Murphy on several cases, said of Murphy, "He supported the legal fight lock, stock, and barrel. I can't think of a single case that I, along with the NAACP, argued in the Supreme Court where Carl wasn't there. And also, when he didn't take us, the group of us, out to lunch afterwards." To learn more about the unsung civil rights hero, Carl Murphy, please visit centerforemergingmedia.org. To learn more about how the Maryland Humanities Council is celebrating the legacy of Rosa Parks, please visit mdhc.org. This feature was produced by the Center for Emerging Media. The words of Carl Murphy were read by Bill Grimmett. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're looking at the election. Why? Tomorrow's election day. And what an election it will be. All of America is holding its collective breath to see who the next president of the United States of America will be, as are my guests. I know one of my guests, I know she's holding her breath. Leah Gilmore is with us, program director.
I haven't fainted yet. It's amazing, you know.
You're not going to faint. And Kevin Dayhoff, former mayor of Westminster, Maryland, and you can see him also at kevindayhoff.com.
Dayhoff.net.
Your net?
KevinDayhoff.net.
Why don't you just be calm and make it easier on me? .net, fine.
Well,
410-319-8888 is the number here. And we will go to the phones now. 410-319-8888. And Abu in Laurel, you're on the air.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Abu. How are you doing?
I think it's a sad irony that Seth Sterkel will not be around tomorrow to see his fellow Chicagoan compete for this electoral race. But I wanted to say that I think what your guest mentioned, some 2020-60 in proportion. I think it's a sterling example of how Obama has leveraged his personal history, not personality, personal history, to step past a lot of these false dichotomies that we're so apt to use. You can't divorce personality from one's political position. He insists on his thinking and his candidacy. There are no black people, no white people, though, you know, we have to acknowledge these categories on a lot of levels. But we don't have to be confined by them. And I think if there's a takeaway in this whole experience for this nation, I think it's that life isn't cut and dry on every dimension, and that we have to step past these convenient analytical models when they don't advance our humanity. Thanks.
Abu, thank you so much for your thoughts.
Well, they don't do the conversation justice. I have often written in the past that the red and blue thing is not necessarily real either. It's just so that the political pundits can have their way with us.
I completely agree with that.
And often when you work with folks, when you get outside of the Eastern elite establishment and you get out into the real world of this country, I'm not really sure that folks really care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or whether you're black or white. It's whether or not you can do the job. It's what value you are going to bring to the life of my family. It just doesn't compute.
Well, you know, I think when we get away from this Eastern part, what I do think is still real America. It's just a different type of America. I think a lot of folks do care, you know, about if you're black or if you're white. But I think that the media drivenness of it, I just made up a word, okay? But the way the media drives this whole race dichotomy is something that to me is definitely overextended.
Well, and as we spoke when we were on the air, when I was on the program last time, I think the media, there's going to be a long conversation about the media, mm-hmm. and the role of the media, the irresponsible role of the media in this contest.
Let me introduce a couple of people to you all right now as we talk with Leah Gilmore and Kevin Dayhoff here in studio. Over the weekend, on the front page of the second section of the Wall Street Journal, there were two op-eds. About will this vote be stolen? Mark Chris Miller wrote one on the left. I've tried to get Mark on today, but Mark couldn't join us today. The other was written by Hans von Spakovsky, who is a visiting scholar at the Heritage Foundation and a former Federal Elections Commissioner, who wrote about voter fraud, which is a really interesting column. And an answer to that column was written in Op-Ed, which is a website, by Ken Anderson, who is a NASA astronomer, whose political writings appear on his website, shockfront.org, and boneheadcompendium.com. He's online with us as well. And Hans von...
love it.
Hans and Ken, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
That was Hans, I take it, right?
Yes.
Good.
And hi, Mark.
Hi, Ken. Welcome. Hans, let's talk a bit about this, because I think one of the issues that people are talking about in this election has come up as an issue from different sides. One was... obviously, the contention Marcus Miller and many others have made that the vote in 2000 was stolen, that suppression of votes is happening in certain states, Ohio, Florida, purging of rolls. Then, in the last few months, we've seen a lot about voter fraud, especially for conservative circles, after there's some questions about Acorn in Ohio. So talk a bit about your thesis here, Hans, for a moment. I'd like to hear Ken's response. We'll talk about it with our listeners.
Well, look, Mark, I'll be the first one to tell you that I think, you know, most of the elections in this country are carried out without too many problems. But, unfortunately, we do have a long history of voter fraud in this country, and there are enough problems in enough elections that we should be concerned about it. And, you know, it's not just something that is an old problem, and it's something that's more recent. I mean, one of the examples I gave in the Wall Street Journal was that, you know, when George Washington first ran for the House of Burgesses, he bought gallons of liquor to pay voters to vote for him. Well, a couple of years ago in Kentucky, the U.S. Department of Justice indicted and convicted seven people for buying votes in that state. So that's not something that's just a remnant of our colonial history. It's something that's happening today. And I think that we, unfortunately, have kind of an honor system today for voter registration and voting that is not doing a good job, and that we need to put things in place to make sure that, you know, every eligible individual gets to vote, but then that their vote is counted fairly and is not diluted by an illegal or an unlawful vote by someone who shouldn't be voting or is casting a fictitious vote.
I ask this, Hans Probe, Attorney Ken Anderson, do we, I mean, the evidence we have in America that this is actually a huge issue in this election. I mean, even Michael Barone and other writers who are fairly conservative in their thinking have all said there's no real evidence in America of major voter fraud. Not now, not at this moment. Of course, there has been. I mean, even Marcus Miller, in his opposing editorial, talked about how one of the reasons John F. Kennedy won was because Mayor Daley bought him the election in Illinois. I mean, so it does happen in America, even in huge elections. But there's been a lot of argument that there's not a lot of voter fraud here, and that is an issue. It's almost a non-issue in America now. I'll let you tackle that, Hans, and go to Ken Anderson for a response.
I would say that the problem is, look, if you have an election with a huge margin of victory, well, then even if fraud occurs, it's probably not going to make a difference. But if you have an election in which a small number of votes makes the difference, and that happens all the time in America. I mean, let's go back to the presidential election in 2000. You know, it was decided by 537 votes in Florida. Well, it doesn't take a lot of votes cast illegally to change the outcome of an election. I just did a paper for the Heritage Foundation about a voter fraud prosecution in one small county in Alabama in the mid-90s in which the evidence showed that there were 1,100 fraudulent absentee ballots cast. You know, Miami mayor's race, 1997. The Miami Herald won a Pulitzer Prize for investigating that race. The race was overturned because a court found 5,000 fraudulent absentee ballots in that race. When you have a close election, and we may have one here, then a small number of votes in key states could unfortunately make a difference.
Ken Anderson?
Hi, Mark. Well, I'm not quite sure where to begin, other than to say that, yeah, the incidence of voter fraud, actual voter fraud that has been indicted and convicted, is real, but it exists, it seems, at a very localized and regional level. For example, the episode that Mr. Von Spakovsky mentioned about Alabama was involving a county sheriff race, I believe, or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Department of Justice itself, just last year, came out with a report after 5 years of investigating voter fraud across the nation, came up with a grand total of 24 convictions for casting a false ballot. There's almost no evidence that suggests that the narrative we're hearing from the Republican Party and the McCain campaign, that voter fraud, voter registration fraud, is rampant, but that There's almost no evidence to suggest that, yes, Mickey Mouse can register, but will he show up to vote? Not likely. In fact, the DOJ's own report suggests that the incidence of actual fraudulent ballots, certainly in the federal elections, is rather rare.
Well,
Ken is being very selective in what he's telling you. First of all, they didn't issue a report about 5 years worth of convictions. They put out a report, I think in 05, about 3 years worth. And his claim there were only 20 convictions is untrue. He's leaving out a lot of other successful convictions for other kinds of voter fraud, everything from non-citizens, people who it is illegal for them to vote in federal state elections, being found and convicted of both voter registration fraud and voting in elections, vote buying. All of those things are things that can affect our elections. And, you know, he says that, well, it only affects small local races. Well, you know, we had a congressional race in 1996 in Orange County, Florida, that was only won by 979 votes. This is the Dornan-Sanchez race. And a House committee, which investigated that race, found that over 600 individuals who were not citizens registered and voted in that race. That was in one congressional district in California. That's more than the margin of victory in Florida in 2000, again, in the presidential race. And, you know, there are many, many other incidents like that. The Department of Justice is not the main enforcer of election laws across the country. It's also done by local officials, mostly district attorneys. And I can tell you, prosecutors don't like these cases. They try to stay away from them. They hurt them politically when they take them up, because no matter who they go after, they're going to enrage half of the electorate, and they don't pursue these cases. But I can cite you case after case after case, and there are several books on it that do the same, that show these kind of voter fraud cases that did make differences in elections.
Ken?
Well, you know, I mean, to say that the Department of Justice is not fully behind voter fraud prosecution is disingenuous at best. I mean, it was very much a priority for the Bush administration. In fact, you know, another aspect of this voter fraud narrative was the entire, or at least a few of the U.S. attorneys who were dismissed by the Justice Department because they specifically refused to prosecute voter fraud prior to the 2006 election. David Iglesias has spoken about this to a great length.
Right.
And, you know, he points out the fact that as a U.S. attorney, he received memoranda in the fall of each year of 2002, 2004, and 2006, specifically admonishing the U.S. attorneys to go after voter fraud. And, you know, he looked at several hundred, at least 100 cases, he said, couldn't find any evidence to prosecute anybody for it. And then was dismissed because he refused to cater to political pressure from the Department of Justice and the congressional representative, I think it was Senator Domenici.
Well, let me open the phones here and see what our listeners are thinking about voting in tomorrow and where we're going to be and whether or not we're going to wake up tomorrow morning and worry about voter fraud or people or suppressing the vote or just what kind of vote we're going to see. Wednesday mornings we're going to wake up to that, but we may know by late tomorrow night.
Or whether we're going to wake up tomorrow and see Mark and Leah with a sign that says, Dewey wins.
Show your food. 410-319-8888.
I'll talk to you later.
And we're waiting. Let's go to the most patient caller we've had all day. Joseph in Severn, Maryland, you're on the air.
Brother Steiner, how are you doing this evening?
Good, Joseph. You've been waiting a long time. I just couldn't let you hang on there like that. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much. I found it very interesting that when I was doing some canvassing, some phone canvassing of my own, I found that everyone, almost to a letter that I called out of state, had already cast their vote. It was like, hey, I'm reminding you to go out and support our candidate. And the thing that they said to me was, well, I've already voted. What are you going to do? And to a letter, they all voted for the same person. So I just feel that we're at a point in this country where so many people from different ethnic and gender backgrounds have looked at what's happened in this country over the past 40 or 50 years. And for me, personally, this is the first time that I'm going to be voting where there isn't a Bush or a Clinton on the ballot. And I feel empowered to really make a choice, not between two ideologies or between two dynastic families and politics, but to make a choice as to a candidate who spoke to me directly and asked for my vote and understands where I exist economically in this particular political climate. And I'm more than happy and willing to stand out in the rain or do whatever I have to cast my vote. And I feel confident that it will be cast and counted correctly in the state of Maryland. And I will finish by saying I am very excited to hear that early voting is going to be coming to the state of Maryland in some way, shape, or form in the near future.
Well, that's if you vote for it.
That's right. You have to vote for it.
It's on the ballot tomorrow.
Like I said, it will be coming because I will be there to vote for it.
Well, let me comment on the early voting thing.
Is this okay? Hans?
About that, that's been a big phenomenon across the country.
It has been.
Probably in this election, we'll have over 30% of Americans vote by early ballot. And I know people like it because they find it very convenient. But I'll tell you three problems, potential problems with it. First of all, particularly for local elections, for congressional races, it makes elections much more expensive because all of the money that candidates used to spend in the last couple of days before elections to get out the vote, they now have to spend it for a couple of weeks before the election because otherwise they're going to miss ballots. It tends to make races more expensive. The other problem with it is that if you voted 3 weeks before the election, and if something happens, you know, some information comes out about a candidate that is important to your choices, you know, you can't pull your vote back. And so you have people voting based on different sets of information. And I'll tell you the final problem, and I found this when I was doing some research a couple of years ago on early voting, is that unfortunately, unless you're very careful, it can give local election officials the ability to manipulate the vote. And I found a specific case down in Texas in which the local school board put a bond referendum up for the schools. And the first time they put it up, it lost. So the second time they put it up for a ballot, they opened up early voting sites only in schools, and they had extended voting hours after school events. And so what happened? Well, that time it passed, but the votes, if they'd been counted only on election day, it would have lost. But with the votes from parents voting in the schools, it passed. So they were able to manipulate the outcome of the race by picking where to put the early voting sites and how long to keep them open. And that's something you have to be very careful about.
Well, that's kind of. I think those, some of those instances were there, but I think that in the larger sense, people will argue, Ken, please jump in here, Leah. And
yeah, I think that
it makes it a much more democratic process in the long run.
Right, and I think that our voting process is definitely ripe for these isolated instances of voter fraud. Most definitely. I couldn't even believe that we were talking about punch cards a few years ago. And you know, the difficulties we have with electronic voting and the non-nationalization of voting. There's a lot of faith we put into every time we push a button and vote for a certain candidate. But I am not one to really think that there are massive instances of voter fraud. And in fact, you know, I had a lot of trepidation when I heard Senator McCain say, when he was discussing about Acorn, that this is the, and I'm paraphrasing, the hugest case of voter fraud in the history of America. I mean, it was something very full of hyperbole, and I definitely did not agree. I don't think that it did not exist. But we always have to keep the relativeness of all of this. This is a huge country with a lot of people voting.
410-319-8888, Jerome, on your cell, you're on the air.
Hey, hi, Mark, how are you?
Well, Jerome.
It's been a long time. Listen, what I worry about is the Republican Party pulling the same little scam that they pulled in Ohio. Now, they've subpoenaed the former Ohio Secretary of State, and the computer guru that works for John McCain and Karl Rove, and they're suing them under the RICO Act. It's alleged that the Ohio Secretary of State flipped the votes to Tennessee, and when he got them back, he cleaned them up in favor of George Bush. Nobody's talking about this. Now, if that ain't voter fraud, I don't know what is.
Jerome, thank you so much for your call. Ken, you still there?
Yep.
Did we lose Ken?
Yes.
You still there, Ken?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
You go ahead. Thoughts?
Well, I actually want to make a more general point about this narrative of voter. Well, the argument that the Republican Party and especially the McCain campaign are making that Acorn's voter registration is fraught with problems, and no doubt there are some, you know, a significant number of problems in various places. But you know, there's a concerted effort to win this narrative of faulty and fraudulent registrations to exactly the fact that those will result in fraudulent voting. And there's this false equivalence established between those two, and they say voter fraud when what they're really talking about is false registrations. And like I said before, there's almost no evidence that this translates into phony voting. One of the points I wanted to bring up in Mr. Von Spakovsky's article was he mentioned this incident in 2004 in Milwaukee, where the Milwaukee Police Department investigated the presidential election, and they found that 5,217 students were registered at one of the college dorms that only housed 2,600 students. And this is true. There were 5,217 registered, but what the police department report actually said is that while they could find no evidence that any of these extra people had voted, what they suspected, what they found, was that the registration polls were just not being purged of students who frequently, you know, on a yearly basis, cycle in and out of these residences.
Gentlemen, I have to jump in for just a minute because we only have a couple minutes left, and I want to give our guests here about 30 seconds or 45 seconds to close out their thoughts on tomorrow's election. And I'm sorry for the phone mix-up, Hans, that we couldn't get you on until later than we thought. The phones were jammed with people calling in today, and Ken as well. But let me ask, starting with Kevin and then Leah, a quick thoughts here on tomorrow.
Well, it's an historic election, and I think turnout is going to be enormous, and an enormous amount of interest. And I was amused with the earlier caller who said that this is one of the first times within memory that he wasn't voting for either a Clinton or a Bush. And I do think that's important. I think when we look at health care, the economy, and national security, I think we have a clear choice as to what direction. Whether you choose McCain or whether you choose Obama, there is going to be definitive change in the near future. And get out to vote. It's a great nation, and it's wonderful to be American, and it's history in the making. Get out and vote.
Leah?
I can't believe it, but I am absolutely echoing what Kevin said. I think it's just a wonderful opportunity, and I think it is a clear choice when we look at health care and the economy and the national security, and just the reintroduction of ourselves into the global community. I think there's a very clear choice. I am voting for Senator Obama, and I'm looking forward to doing it. And I think whomever you vote for, make sure that you make the effort to go out there and do it.
Hans von Spakovsky and Ken Anderson, thank you for being here. Leah Gilmore, Kevin Dayhoff, thank you for being in the studio with us. Folks, get out there and vote tomorrow. It's a must. You have to get out and vote. The Mark Sanders Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Mark Sanders Show is produced by Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips, engineered by Melvin Jones, theme music by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show and podcasts of other shows, go to steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care and vote. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.